catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's episode of Friday Morning GM with my co-host, Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Good to see the Ravens checking some of the boxes off, fleshing out the roster a little bit to the start of free agency. How are you making out?
Doing fine myself. Busy as hell for the Ravens here and busy as hell with draft prep and whatnot, because those shows are starting up in about a week and a half or so, and we'll be running for about 2 weeks, a very, very strenuous time, probably the most strenuous time of the year for me in terms of writing and recording shows.
Mm-hmm. Sure is. Busy time of year.
All right. So the big news today was the Josh Jones signing. So addresses their tackle needs in some fairly small way, as far as I'm concerned. Guy who's kind of struggled in four NFL seasons. What do you think about it?
I think it's a good move to add some flexibility to the offensive line situation after the departures. Potentially could be a swing tackle. Also has a little bit of experience as a guard. Maybe that's where they could find some value by shifting him inside potentially. 21 starts for Arizona over his first three seasons, and then 3 starts last year in Houston, although mixed results.
Yeah, he's one of the most penalized players in the entire NFL over the course of his career. We used to say that about John Simpson. Wait till you hear the numbers for Josh Jones. They're a lot worse. Still one of the youngest offensive tackles on the market at 27, which I think if you want to start with the glasses half full, that would be it. In terms of the penalties, was something we really hoped the offensive line coaches with the Ravens, being among the best in the league, would be able to fix. That did not work out in Simpson's case in terms of both frequency and severity. They're virtually identical to what had happened before in his career with the Raiders. Josh Jones, 26 penalties in 1,762 NFL snaps his career. That's one every 67.8. Now, he does play tackle. You pick up a couple more penalties at tackle, but compares, for example, to Simpson, who had one every 95 or has one every 95.5 career. So it's 41% more penalties per snap for Josh Jones.
Yeah. That's seems to be an issue that's pretty hard to rectify once the players sort of get those bad habits, the grabby. The quick scouting report, heavy hands, but also heavy feet. So, yep. Not a great combination. PFF charted him for 9 pressures over 151 pass protection snaps last season. Also projected the contract to be, Brad did, 2 years, $13 million. So we'll see where it comes in. Wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens drove a hard bargain there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a one-year deal, since we haven't heard otherwise at this point. I think we would have by now, at least, that it's a two-year deal, you know. But we'll see. And it could be more complicated than that. It could be, you know, that the Ravens have an option for a second year, or that, you know, right, things exist in there. But most contracts, like the Henry contract, is really an option contract for the Ravens for that second year. But let's talk a little bit more about the penalties, because it's the huge part about Jones. 10 stalled drives already in his career. That is a very large number. In terms of, you know, the number of total drives he's been involved in offensively, and ones that he stalled. The Cardinals actually gave up on him after 3 years. So they, you know, the Arizona Cardinals are not known for their tackle depth, though they developed a little bit through the draft, but they've had some horrible tackles over the year. And after 3 years, they traded him for a 5th round pick, despite the fact that PFF actually graded him the best they'd ever did in 2022. They graded him in the 70s in pretty much all categories. And with the barriers to entry at left tackle, that's maybe the most damning piece of evidence about him. As the Cardinals said, you know, we just can't live with this anymore after 3 years.
Yes, I'd agree. You know, it seems like pretty much a reclamation project signing, potentially. I do like the age that he is young. He does have a relatively high draft pedigree. Some are speculating that this may signal McCary as the starting right tackle over Falele. Wasn't sure if you thought that was the direction that this leads them to.
I don't immediately get led to that. I saw Gordon McGinnis had posted that, and I respect Gordon a lot, but I don't. That's not the conclusion I would come to. McCary has been a very good backup left tackle. And when you say that, what does a very good backup left tackle in the NFL look like that day? He's above the replacement level, if you had to go to him. And that's exactly what McCary is. He's not good, but he's above the replacement level. And that's a very solid place to be. The Ravens are paying him $4.4 million this year to be a backup left tackle. If he went and played guard or right tackle or anything else, I think it would be a potential reduction in his value. Not only would he, but, you know, it doesn't really have the strength or the power to play right tackle. But he also, if you lose him over there and he can't play left tackle at some point, as happened with Tyree Phillips in 2021, you just have a much worse situation on your hands. So I think he stays as the backup left tackle. That'd be my guess. I'm guessing a starter, a draft pick, or Jones ends up being, or potentially Falele ends up being the starting right tackle. But the Ravens are running into a position now where they're going to potentially have to cut a tackle anyway. If you look at it, they've got Stanley, who's on the roster for one more year. They've got Jones is on the roster for one or two more years, probably. We don't know exactly at this point because we don't know the terms of the agreement. We're recording this, by the way, on Thursday afternoon, but the report is not yet out about what's occurred with that. So, you know, just in terms of the Falele is on currently a 2-year plan before he's out of here in terms of his time being up. He's actually potentially on the cut list for this year. And then if they get a draft pick, depending on where they get him, they may have another developmental player that needs to take up a roster spot.
Right. I think they're pretty much capped out at 10 offensive linemen on the final 53, and they're pretty much at 8 right now. So probably looking to draft 2. I think best case scenario would probably be that Falele does build upon the steps he showed towards the end of last season, where he did improve his footwork to some extent and was playing much better than he had in previous years. So when you're looking at the offensive line as a whole, it seems that an early tackle that can get into the mix with a right tackle competition or potentially be Ronnie Stanley's succession plan at the left tackle is the real primary need. Maybe without Mustafer, they could keep 5 tackles. And then that would be 10 if they don't necessarily have a true backup center. But I think it's 10's the final number.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, I think if you want to lean on that flexibility, then having an extra tackle like Jones, who in theory could play guard, you are kind of carrying an extra guard that way. So you could live with that. You really are banking then on a couple of unknowns. Voorhees in particular is a tremendous unknown. He might be the most important offensive player for the Ravens this coming year. Derrick Henry is important too, of course. What Lamar does has still a lot of variability. But after those couple of guys, maybe Bateman, you get down to a player like Voorhees and what he could do for the Ravens. Because if he has a big year, it affects the Ravens over multiple years, not just one. Cleveland, if he has a big year, it's great. Might give the Ravens a comp pick, but it doesn't really have a long-lasting impact on the Ravens the way a big year from Voorhees would as a rookie. Effectively a rookie. He'd be a year one player this year because of the NFI.
Agreed. That's best case scenario. Falele, like I mentioned, builds upon his strong finish. Voorhees steps up, then Cleveland is given one actually penciled in with the job, runs with it, and maybe the offensive line is not as doom and gloom as some are currently projecting. So we'll see. But hopefully the number for Jones comes in at a reasonable price tag, considering his grading and his penalty history.
Right. I would agree with that. Anything else I need to say about this? Won't affect the Ravens comp picks as far as I can see in terms of the number, but it well may mean one of their sixes becomes a seven. And again, it depends on the number. It could even be a little bit worse than that, but there could be a downgrade here in terms of this. I am not at a point yet where I can say whether this affects the Clowney signing because I don't know the amount involved, but I have to think there's risk that it's less likely today than it was yesterday that Jadeveon Clowney be a Raven in 2024.
I would agree. Apparently he's visiting the Jets and, it's all interconnected. The cap space is a finite resource and every move is connected to another one indirectly. Even when they push the money off into next year or down the road with void years, that's still that bill comes due. Essentially, on the topic of outside linebackers, the market is drying up faster than I anticipated. They're pretty much down to Clowney, Kyle Van Noy, Bud Dupree, Carl Lawson, and Manny Agba. And those are pretty much the five starting caliber outside linebackers left. And we did the show a few weeks ago, and I think there was 15 outside linebackers in the top 150. And several of them went off the board faster than I thought.
Okay, it's not completely expected, obviously, but also I'm not sure that top 150 includes a lot of the types of players the Ravens have gone for over the last several years where they've dipped into the bargain bin. Like, would Jason Pierre-Paul have been on the top 150? I'm not sure he would have been. So anyway, I'm not sure it necessarily means the Ravens are completely out of options. And also, a lot of those guys tend to get caught late after the draft, after the teams think they have their new person. They cut loose their current guy. Mm-hmm. We did learn that Morgan Moses played with a torn pec, he said, in 2023. Warrior, obviously, but maybe explains a little bit of why the Ravens decided they had to move on with this trade.
I'm not sure if I quite see it that way. If he was able to play through it and still play reasonably well, and now he's had surgery 6 weeks ago, there's one way to look at it is to say he's potentially going to be better next year with a healthy, without that restriction. But, they made the decision. Obviously, a lot of turnover, overhauling the offensive line, and that was one of the decisions they made. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Let's talk keep it on the plus side right now, which are some of the other new signings in terms of adding players. Mollett re-signed for 2 years, a solid play in 2023. I have not seen contract details, but he played 35% of the snaps as the nickel. Most of those on passing downs when Hamilton was moved back to the back end. Hamilton, the more common early down big nickel player.
I like Mollett. I think he's physical. I like the way he plays. He's a good blitzer. He's pretty tight coverage, at least at the first and second level. Maybe, obviously, we saw Valdez Scantling got him over the top, up the seam. But a little surprised that they decided to bolster slot cornerback before perimeter cornerback. If you look at the roster, they have essentially five players who have all shown signs of playing well in the slot. versus only two on the perimeter. So a little bit surprising there. And I'm not sure if this means that Hamilton will be playing deep more often next year.
Yeah, I would not be particularly happy with that. I want him to be a, you know, somebody that can play anybody, but primarily as the nickel. But when you talk about the relationship between deep and slot corners, you have Humphrey and Stevens as being the outside guys who are plus, and then you have Washington, Mollett, and who else in terms of slot corner guys? We'll play Hamilton.
Hamilton, Humphrey.
Humphrey again.
And okay. I think Pepe, his rookie year, I have more confidence in Pepe in the slot than I do in Armour Davis on the boundary at this point.
That's fair.
So that could go either way, but a lot of options there. I really don't want them to draft a slot-only cornerback in the draft now. I will say that.
Yeah, I might not have wanted that anyway. If you've got Hamilton around, you probably don't want to waste somebody on somebody you know who is best served playing for a team that will play, you know, 93% of the snaps in nickel or 92%. I wouldn't want that. Mollett, I there's things I like about him. He's a feisty downhill player. I like him as a hitter. Does have kind of a high missed tackle rate that's a little bit troublesome at 20%. And I think if you want to pick the cornerback who benefited most from the Ravens' two high looks, I think it might be Mollett. Did pretty well also because the inside linebackers actually gave up 8.2 yards per target for the year. That doesn't include the – actually, no, I think it does include the postseason as well with that. But, not great in terms of the Ravens' general level. Modestly surprised that they re-signed him for 2 years. Where are you on that?
Yeah, 30 years old. So, you know, a lot of corners hit that 30-year-old marker. Same with running backs. Those are probably the two positions where once you turn 30, it gets a little dicey. A little bit surprised. You know, maybe it's just playing some cap gymnastics as well. I think they probably also value him as a special teams core performer. So maybe that's where it is, but I'm hoping this is pretty darn close to the veteran minimum and not a little bit too generous of a number there for Mollett.
Right. I certainly wouldn't want it to be 2 years, $5 million. Let's put it that way. So he had $200,000 in guaranteed money last year. So he didn't come here with zero leverage with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. He must've had other offers if they got to a point where he had $200,000 guaranteed. So anyway, you know, not a bad player by any stretch. And by the way, he was in there primarily on the passing down snap. So I would expect his yards per target number to be or to have more challenging assignments in terms of coverage. Let's put it that way. And probably end up with a yards per target that's a little higher. But it was primarily Hamilton on those early downs playing more.
He slumped a little bit towards the end of the year, Mollett. About three quarters of the way through the year, he had some gaudy yards per target numbers. And then the last quarter of the year where they started picking on him a little bit.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Josh Johnson. This is a bridge move, clearly. You mentioned, I think, before the show that he'd been signed for $1.2 million. So it seems like at or very close to the vet minimum.
Yeah. Guaranteed. That's the key part is it's 1.2 guaranteed. So that's according to Brian McFarland. Perhaps he's the backup quarterback. I hope that they can get away with only rostering two quarterbacks on the 53. Last year they had three the entire year, even four towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So to guarantee that, to have that guaranteed, I think you should probably pencil him in as the backup.
I would think so. And we may be living in a time where teams really feel like they need to carry three because the extra third player activation on game day that you get. I don't think there's enough of an incentive for that to make it something you have to do. But I think when it occasionally comes up, you've usually lost the game anyway because your starting quarterback is out, your second quarterback is out. You've usually lost the game anyway, so it's not that much of a bonus to bring in another Malik Cunningham instead of, say, Willie Snead from years ago.
Or Derrick Henry. I think Derrick Henry could be the emergency quarterback based on the trip plays he's put out throughout his career.
Yeah, I don't think we'd be calling any passing plays, but you might call a passing player too. The only thing I think of when I think of a Josh Johnson signing, a guy at 38 years old coming in and being the backup quarterback, is, in the words of Marge Simpson, let us never speak of him again. I don't want to hear his name. Okay, yeah, he's going to be the second or the third quarterback on every 53-man roster projection we have to make, and we're going to do a two-player show on him this summer and whatnot. But the less we hear Josh Johnson's name the entire season, the better.
Absolutely. Absolutely true.
All right. Chris Board. I have not seen officially that he signed. I did see that it was projected to happen, so I assume it is, but the Ravens haven't put it out on their on their Twitter yet, last I looked, which was about an hour ago. I'm assuming this is at or near the vet minimum, also should not affect comp picks in any way. Special teams, backup blank role, what are you seeing?
Yeah, pretty much. I think more of a will, backup will, maybe gets in the mix with Simpson as some type of specialty package where Simpson would come off the field and he would go on. But, you know, 9 yards per target over his career. I know the Ravens and Wink Martindale were using him as sort of a dime linebacker, even though he is a linebacker. And I wasn't very impressed. I think he's more just of a Delshon Phillips special teams ace replacement.
Yeah, I mean, Delshon Phillips is good. Delshon Phillips could play linebacker as well. And we didn't get a great look at a lot of Delshon Phillips, but in camp and was making plays every day. Chris Board is not a guy you want on the field at linebacker at this point in his career. I'm not sure he ever was. I know there is one of the Baltimore analysts, Denard Melton, who feels extremely strongly about this, and every time Chris Board comes out with a whole spew of bile comes out at the same time about the player. But Denard, by the way, Board's not had a great career in coverage, that's for certain. And the Ravens tried to shoehorn him into that role, as you mentioned, Boss.
Yes. So last time they signed him, it was, I think, $2.5 million for 1 year, which I thought was a little bit of an overpay. Hopefully this is closer to the veteran minimum. And I think it probably lessens the need of drafting a linebacker. If he's going to be one of your backups and maybe Josh Ross is your other backup, you're probably four inside linebackers. You're probably in good shape there.
Yeah, I would think so. And then your fifth inside linebacker, if you have one, is a dime back. It's not a true linebacker, or it's Harrison, who is the next guy we ought to talk about in terms of moving on to the contract details on some of these previous signings, because we didn't know all these last week when a lot of these were announced. But Malik Harrison, I was really surprised to see that's a 1 year, $2.6 million deal. I think you got to look at every single one of these with tremendous scrutiny. And that's more than I would have expected it to be.
So on the bright side, according to Brian, this contract, the Ravens used the four-year qualifying contract, which they haven't used since Anthony Levine. The advantage is it takes that $2.6 million payout and only counts $1.1 million against the cap.
Oh, fantastic.
So this is sort of that veteran benefit where you get to pay them more, but it counts less on the cap so that all the veterans don't get pushed out of the league. They were able to take advantage of that. So I'm very happy with this contract, with that number.
I am completely in agreement. And $1.5 million of Steve Bisciotti's money, you can spend that on rings. You can spend that on this. I want you to spend it on rings, but I like this, and I like money spent on assistant coaches as well. So that's
definitely
that's well done. Okay. Matabike, 4 years, $98 million. I noticed there's $11 million dead in 2028 was the big news for me coming out of this. So
two void years. It was originally reported as a straight 4 year contract, actually has two void years, $11 million. So they're basically, borrowing about 10% of the contract value for the void years. So,
And the tough years will come in 26 and 27, when he'll be over $30 million or at or over $30 million both years. So it's going to become a very expensive contract, but it's affordable this year. Don't let that fool you. you know, the Ravens are going to have to pay up on this, on basically this entire deal. The only year he can reasonably be cut is the last one, in 27. So, Justin Madubuike really needs to play like Justin Madubuike did this last year, to really get tremendous value out of this contract.
Yeah, that's becoming a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, of people saying the cap hit is only this for the first year without looking at the guarantees down the road and how they kind of, you know, mix and match and push it off. And people use that as a way to justify every move, but I don't quite see it that way.
Yeah, it's complete horseshit thinking. I'm so bothered by that. And you get into this, and that is the general way that most fans think, is they have a 2024 only view of the team in terms of so many things. It bothers me no end. It bothers me in terms of, as we discussed on this show before, the difference between saving cap and deferring cap. They are very different things. Saving cap, you cut the guy's salary this year, he doesn't play for you, like Moses, for example, is $5.5 million saved from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. I'd even say it's less than that, because you have to replace Moses with somebody who's going to cost you about $1 million at the minimum. So it's really 4.5 save. But anyway, that's the save number. You call it 4.5, call it 5.5, you're fine. If the in terms of the deferred number, if you put off cap like they did with OBJ and, you know, move the void years out a year, you're not saving cap. You're deferring cap.
So. Yes, completely agree there. And I think that needs to be understood and incorporated into these discussions a little bit better.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it needs to be part of the lexicon, part of how we discuss this thing in general. Let's move on to the Stanley restructure. 2025, where he was certainly going to be cut because there's a $20 million savings, actual savings, $20 million salary the Ravens wouldn't pay, was not going to be paid. But now they've turned that into a free agency year, actually a void year. And I believe under the current contract, although there may be rules on restructures of this type, I believe now he becomes eligible for a comp pick after, if he becomes a free agent after 2024. It would be in the 2026 draft, but I believe that's the case. So if he had a big year, looks like Ronnie Stanley again, hopefully the Ravens can extend him, but if they can't, then somebody else gets him and the Ravens get a comp pick. And it might be a good one because, hey, he's a left tackle.
Yes, that is the rule, as I understand it. If a player that is released due void years is still eligible. Mm-hmm. Two takeaways from this: $500,000 game bonus for every game. So
no, it's $500,000 in total for all games. I did ask that question of Brian. It's like $30,000 or $29,000 per game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was, well, anyway, $10 million not likely to be earned. Mm-hmm. So if he plays the full season and earns that, then that money will hit on next year's cap. But it seemed like a good deal for me. I thought the game bonuses were more. But either way, I think that is a good incentive for Ronnie.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I thought that's a perfect way to incent Ronnie on a one-year deal with the Ravens, that tie up $8.5 million of his total in can you dress for the game kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not like the Ravens would ever want to be without Ronnie Stanley for that kind of number, so per game. So I don't think Ronnie should have any fear from the organization. Now, that might change if the Ravens have a real down year and they're, you know, they're 2-9 at some point this year. They might decide they want to sit Ronnie and kill off the per game bonuses you get from it. Then that would be a...
That'd be pretty risky in my view. I think that would sour some agents to the Ravens.
Set a bad precedent.
Certain things I think, but deactivating a healthy player with a game bonus would be pretty shady.
It is a Raiders staple, let me tell you, that is to cut that guy. There are teams in the National Football League who aren't ashamed reputationally of what it will mean, but I admittedly, a lot of those teams are teams with a lot less to lose, like the Raiders.
Right. Sure.
All right, let's move on and talk about Derrick Henry's contract and what we now know that we didn't last week. It's essentially a one-year deal for $9 million with a 2025 option for another $7 million. So, and then there's a $4 million in incentives, as I understand it, over those 2 years to be earned. No void years on the contract currently. Now, that could change. whip into that next year. But they, if they want to be out after 1 year, it'll cost them $9 million. If he plays both years, it'll cost them $16 million. And then there's incentives also to be earned whether he plays 1 or 2 years.
Correct. Yep. $5.1 million cap hit in 2024, $10.9 million cap hit in 2025. If they do release him after this year, they save the $6 million base salary, and the cap hit for the 25 season is reduced by the same $6
million. So it's one of the interesting things about what you said is the deferral, it's not nothing, but it's not enormous on this contract, that there's only a $3.9 million deferral on Henry into 25. Mm-hmm. Which actually, for a player of his stature, makes that contract more attractive than I originally thought. Mm-hmm. Right? I still think that the way that this if Derrick Henry does what he's done in four of the past five seasons and leads the NFL in carries, I don't think it will be Derrick Henry's fault when it does not work out, or if it does not work out. That you know, it'll probably be a case of the offensive line lets him down. With the problems they have there. But I do think, as we've mentioned on previous shows, that you're making a choice here between a back who has been very productive in this system in Gus Edwards and a back who's been productive but does not have great rate statistics, in particular the success rate with Tennessee, who does it in volume. And you want that guy instead. And I just, you know, again, it may be a case of, can the Ravens really find a similar stylistic fit that is a third or less of the cost?
Yes, yes. One way I've just opposed this sort of debate and tried to frame it as Derrick Henry versus Jadeveon Clowney. Mm-hmm. What's more impactful, adding a 0.2 WAR running back to the NFL's number one rushing offense, or subtracting a 0.35 WAR outside linebacker from the NFL's number one pass defense? For me personally, I think it's Clowney, pretty easy choice.
Yeah, I mean, I want Clowney over Henry if it came down to that decision. I'm still hopeful they can get both, but the way Clowney is doing the whole North American tour right now, I don't think it really looks that great for him re-signing with the Ravens.
Yeah. Agreed. Time will tell.
All right. Johnson, 1 year, $1.2 million. I think we talked about that already. That's great. That's exactly what you want to pay for your backup quarterback if you can. I actually think the Ravens may be going for a reset this year, by the way. They clearly need to reset at the position and get a cheap player. Johnson is a simple one-year Band-Aid. At least that's the way I'd see it. Maybe he'll be playing at 41. Who knows? But he's 38 this year. You don't want that. I don't think that provides you anything as a backup quarterback in terms of true insurance for Lamar. Now, do the Ravens have anything if they lose Lamar? Probably not. But I really hate for a season to be flushed just the moment, you know, he gets hurt and has to miss four games, say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's always the thing. If it's a short-term injury, can you bridge to the return of your MVP MVP quarterback? I guess Malik Cunningham could still factor into the mix, could draft somebody, could find the next UDFA. But apparently Huntley went to Cleveland on just a one-year deal. I haven't seen terms, but it looks to be pretty cheap. I probably would have preferred Huntley to Johnson if the cost was the same.
I would not disagree with that, by the way. And I think he was a vet min guy. I think it might have been the exact same amount, because Huntley made something like $2.7 million this last year on his RFA year. Might have been less than that. They might have reduced it, because one of the interesting.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Things about RFA years is that they're not guaranteed. So often, and the Ravens had this in the past, I think, who were the players? It might have been Ryan Jensen and somebody else were entering their fourth year, and Ryan Jensen broke out as a star that year, but then it might have been James Hurst was another one at the same point in his career at that time. And they just brought them both in and say, hey, you're both making $1.2 million. We can't pay you both 2.7 or 2.5 or whatever it was. And so they reduced the salaries of both of them. I don't know if they announced it to them at the same time, but all of the offensive linemen end up earning the same amount that year.
Yeah, I do recall that happening before where they exercised it and then rescinded it. So there is some flexibility there as compared with the restricted free agent compared to a fifth-year option type of arrangement, which is guaranteed. In Cleveland, apparently Huntley's going to be competing with Dorian Thompson-Robinson for the QB3 spot. Because
wow, they give up on Thompson-Robinson that quickly?
Apparently, because Winston was brought in to back up Watson.
Yeah, you're right.
So unless they're going to cut Winston, that they just added, they can't cut Watson. He's fully guaranteed.
Yeah, you can't cut DTR because he'll be picked up. But if they could have Huntley on the practice squad as the year starts and then bring him back as needed to be the QB3. Mm-hmm. So I would think that's the more likely eventuality for Huntley, but we'll see. That's interesting. I mean, the Browns needed every one of four quarterbacks last year to start games. Right. And so they, they clearly are being extra careful at the position. Okay. Let's talk about the Michael Gallup visit, current, I guess, Cowboys receiver. I'm not that juiced about Michael Gallup. What are your feelings on this?
I was a pretty big Michael Gallup fan, even going back to pre-draft, and he had a pretty terrible knee injury about a season and a half ago, and he hasn't quite gained that explosiveness back. I do think he fits the profile of what they need as far as a perimeter-oriented receiver. He lines up about 90% outside, so he's not a slot guy who's going to be a direct competitor for Aguilar. Aguilar pretty much a slot guy at this point. 7.5 yards per target in 23, not great.
That's not great. And I didn't check for his career where he is. Maybe you have a better idea than that. And I'm just looking it up right now. I'm going to take a moment. But yards per target for his career is 7.8. He was actually 5.7 in 22. So, and was better early in his career with a peak of 9.8 in 2019. He's played in a Dallas offense with Dak Prescott that I would think would be pretty much tailor made for him, particularly with the other receivers there and the attention they would get. Mm-hmm. Did peak out with over 100 targets in both 19 and 20. So, he's a player. He's had three straight 418 to 445 yard seasons for what that means. And, Yeah, it's I wouldn't be thrilled with it as signing. And maybe there's a price I think it'd be worth it to have him as the fifth receiver, but it's not a player that really excites me.
Yeah, I'm not overly excited. It could be like an Aguilar, though, where you sign him and then he plays better in their system. He regains, you know, whatever he had lost. I think I'd like to have four veterans if you can. You still need to have two receivers if you're going to roster six. So you want to take two in the draft or one veteran. If he's cheap, I would be pretty satisfied with that one.
Are you including Wallace in that number? You have Wallace as number four right now or not?
Yes, I'm sorry. You're right. He is. I misspoke there. But Wallace would be four. So Aguilar, Zay Flowers, and Rashad Bateman. That's your four receivers, so you need two more to make six.
Okay. All right, that works for me. And then one draft pick, one free agent, which I think is the likely way the Ravens will go. They could go two draft picks. When they've used – where the Ravens have really failed, they have had not great success at number one in terms of drafting receivers, though recently it's been better in that area. Where they've really failed is with mid-round draft picks at wide receiver. Those guys, they just haven't gotten any value at all out of them. So anyway, the – you know, the Jordan throw the ball into the pond, Lasley and Jaleel Scott and those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, not their forte, but I would say, DaCosta has shot more shots and done better there. You know, I did a study a couple of years ago, the top 70, if you want year one production out of your receivers, the vast majority come from the top 75 in the draft. Puka Nacua broke out last year, maybe the exception to prove the rule.
Yeah, very good. All right, well, let's do some free agency tracking and just make sure we're keeping up with this. Ravens have now lost 10 players, make it 11, I think, actually now. Duvernay to the Jags, Simpson to the Jets, Stone to the Bengals, Edwards to the Chargers, Darby to the Jags, Ott to the Commanders, Queen to the Steelers, and Delshawn Phillips to the Texans. We know about all those last week, those eight. Okay. And there are two more this week that we haven't discussed yet. The first is, the first is Tyler Huntley. We think it's near the vet minimum. I thought I saw a tweet that indicated that within the last 90 minutes or so, but I might be wrong about that. So we'll wait and make sure that's right. I think we may have talked that one out in terms of the need to reset at that position.
Yeah, hypothetically, you want to have another four-year cheap guy with the ability to bridge through if Lamar misses a few games here or there. Sort of how Huntley was. If you can find the next Huntley, that's probably what you're looking for. Maybe a little bit more arm strength.
Yeah, they've had some good ones over the years. They've drafted in mid and late rounds and guys who actually gave them some playing time. Chris Redman was a three. So he gave the Ravens a little bit. They actually went to the 2002 season with him as the starter. And then the other guy is Anderson, who didn't play for the Ravens, but ended up being a decent quarterback for the Browns for a couple of years there. So, a guy who could help. And I think he was a six, too. So really not a particularly high draft pick.
I think it was a six, yeah.
Another big loss today. I think today it was official. Maybe it was yesterday. It was official. Kevin Zeitler to the Lions. 1 year. I think it is 1 year. By the way, money has not been disclosed. There's a contract out there. No TC.
1 year, $6 million.
Holy mackerel! That's it.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking. I mean, Simpson goes for 2 years, $18 million, and I hear it's $2 million. 2 years, $12 million with other incentives to be earned to get it up to $18 million, and Zeitler 1 year, $6 million.
Right. Very surprising to me. That's a bargain for a guy that's been one of the league's best pass protecting guards the last 3-4 years running. And he's probably going to be a pretty damn good fit with the Detroit Lions and the system they run on offense.
I would think so. There's one thing that comes up about the Zeitler deal that's true generally of a lot of guards, but a lot of guards that got thrown money at this year were younger players like Hunt, like Simpson even. He's not a real old guy. He's been in the league for 4 years. Which is the minimum you could be if you're going to be a UFA. I mean, but Zeitler, there's a mechanic in play that if you sign an older player to a two-year contract, you do so at your own peril, because there's an old maid syndrome that goes with it. We've talked about it in terms of several Ravens in history. Ed Reed was basically wanting to renegotiate his contract every year. Marshall Yanda at the end, you know, got a two to make one deal. Derek Mason got, I think, more than one two to make one deal towards the end of his career with the Ravens. So, you know, you don't want to be stuck in this thing where you're constantly renegotiating a two-year deal for 1 year with your player. You want a guy who's going to sign for 2 years and play for 2 years. And I thought it was a miracle in some ways that Zeitler made it through the entire 3 years with the Ravens. 3 years for $22.5 million for what Kevin Zeitler gave the Ravens. Absolute freaking steal. Absolute steal. One of the greatest free agent signings in Ravens history.
I agree. And I agree that he was aging, but for only a one-year deal, only for $6 million, I would have made that. I would have taken that chance. The only thing that really makes sense to me is they just really, really want to give Ben Cleveland a shot at his natural position of right guard. That's the only reason it really makes sense.
There's something else going on here, too, and I think it's the Orioles kind of are running into this a lot, is that they have a pretty decent set of outfielders, for example, in Mullins and Hayes and Santander. And they aren't bad, but they're not also the strength of the team. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those three guys are not the strength of the team. And then they've got this incredible core of outfielders coming up. So the Ravens had to, at some point, and this may be the case with both Zeitler and Moses, say, look, we've got to move on. We have a chance to get cheaper, and we have a really legitimate chance with Cleveland and Voorhees to have players who are pretty good, you know, 80-20 rule. And we can get younger at the positions. Voorhees in particular could give them a four-year option on a player if he works out. And that's what the Orioles have. The Orioles have you have Santander, and for 1 year, and the last year of his arbitration, I believe, is this year. Mm-hmm. Or you could just let him go, not pay that money. And the Orioles have been so dollar conscious. I would have completely understood it from that respect, and give the job to Kowser or Stowers or whoever. And now they only have four total roster spots in the outfield, typically, that they would assign, and they don't have room for all the guys. So some one or two players of Kowser, Kerstad and Stowers are going to start the year in AAA. And, you know, in the infield, same problem. You know, you got Mateo and Arias and then they have, potentially a player like Norby gets sent back to the minor leagues before it. I don't think it'll affect Jackson Holliday, but it affects a player like Norby.
And Mayo too.
Mayo, good point.
Had a good spring. You'd like to flip some of those older guys for maybe a relief arm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, really sad to see that. I'm happy Kevin Zeitler gets a shot with a contender. So that's positive. Maybe the Detroit Lions make a Super Bowl finally with some of his leadership. But definitely a heartbreaking amount of money the Ravens are letting him go for in terms of my view of it.
I agree. So update the comp pick formula. The Ravens are currently plus six, maximum of four. That plus six includes the fourth for PQ, and 3 6th rounders. So still a couple more moves to impact that to go.
Okay. And you've included in that, and that's just the recent OTC projection of those most recent.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Okay. So the one, the Henry deal canceled out the Simpson pick. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So that's a pretty good place to be. If they ended up with a fourth and 3 6, that's a pretty good amount of compensatory capital. The last time
the Henry one canceled out Geno, Simpson.
Very good.
Simpson remained. Yep.
Simpson remains and is a six, which Correct. Is surprisingly, a little bit surprisingly low given the 2 years, $18 million. Thought he could have been a little bit higher, but that's okay. All right, let's take a look at the remaining UFAs the Ravens have, and then we'll call it a show here. Most important by far still is the one at the top of the list, and that's Jadeveon Clowney.
Completely agree. It would be fantastic if the Ravens can buttress that outside linebacker one position. I thought you can make a case that Clowney was the second or third best defender on the team last year, in my view. If you can take that, check that box off before the draft, then you can go into the draft with pretty much free ability to go after offensive linemen, cornerbacks, and receivers. So I would, at this point of the juncture of the offseason, at this point of the team's trajectory, I would pay up for Jadeveon Clowney.
What's your number?
10. I'd go to 10.
Okay. 10 one year, 10. Tack on some void probably they would do. And yeah. Then season ticket holders looking at paying for that in the future. All right. I could live with it. I mean, he's worth it in terms of dollars. I don't know what he's going to try and sign for. There's still some teams he's talking to, including the Panthers, who have some cap space. And I mean, they're going to be able to pay more. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dalvin Cook, I'm not expecting him back, particularly with the Derrick Henry signing. You never know, I guess, in terms of how he might be a midseason guy, a guy they still are aware of, who's played in the system last year, who they, you know, still think now is only 2 years removed at this point from the end of a 4-year 5,000 yard run.
Yeah. It seemed to, he lost it quickly. He had that one decent run. I think it was his first carry and then didn't do too much more. It'll be a little bit interesting to see how they address or how they enter the season at running back 3. If Keaton Mitchell isn't ready to go week 1, I don't think he will be. You don't necessarily want to use, fifth round pick on a back to fill that for half the season. And then the second half of the season, you're stuck carrying 4 running backs and going short somewhere else on your roster. So I think a player like Cook maybe could make sense, or an undrafted free agent probably makes the most sense to give you that first half season bridge to Mitchell.
Okay. And he'd be a practice squad elevation potentially even for mm-hmm. some time if he was needed later due to injuries. So you'd have some options. If you have a good player at running back, good chance you're going to lose him through that process. The Ravens have lost Mizell and Mostert through that process, and mm-hmm. they're guys certainly that went on to do some things that were positive. And they picked up players that way too. They picked up Collins through that process, so you know, it is possible you gain. What J.K. Dobbins, you still put the chance extremely low he would return?
Extremely low. With Henry as the lead back, I don't see why he would want to come back.
Okay. Mustafer, you mentioned early, good depth at center with that. Didn't see anything positive out of him at guard this year. That was only just a very few snaps. But you do need a backup center. And so the Ravens have to decide, would they be okay if they had to put McCary there for a time and then either had to be naked at left tackle or have to train one of their guards to play center? I suppose a player like Voorhees could be the backup center if necessary, but there's a lot more to it than just sticking somebody in that spot and expecting them to start making shotgun snaps.
Yeah. And they're big guy. I mean, Voorhees would be a pretty big center, one of the biggest centers, I think, in the league. And then you have maybe some leverage issues. I'd like to bring Mustafer back, you know, if he signs again for the veteran minimum, and then you have that, you know, veteran offset where you get a little bit of money credited back to the cap. It's pretty much the same price as a rookie or even an undrafted rookie. There's only a few $100,000 difference. So, yeah, I'd like to have him back if you can.
I would too. And I think the reason the Ravens haven't moved on it is they kind of want to wait till after the draft to see where they are, because, you know, if they've got 12 linemen after the draft because they go crazy drafting them, then there isn't a lot of point to do that to Mustafer. You could ask him to come in and say, hey, we can't give you any guaranteed money, but, you know, come on in and you're on the list of people we're seriously considering because you can play backup center. They could try and sell it to him like that, but I don't think he's the kind of player that you throw a significant amount of guaranteed money at. And when I say that, I mean about $150,000 and up. Let's say that. I don't think they would do that to just guarantee his spot on the 90 with no chance or a limited chance at the 53.
Agree. And he didn't have anything guaranteed last year, if I recall, because he was a handshake deal guy. And then he went down to the practice squad for about 2-3 weeks. And then when Mustafer had the high ankle sprain, that's when he was finally promoted. And then he stuck out the rest of the way. So if you can do that again, but then maybe again, maybe he puts tape that he put out last year playing for the Ravens, boosts his market value a little bit.
Yeah. That obviously was pretty decent at center this last year. So I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Let's move on. Kyle Van Noy. You know, he is a pretty good Sam option for the Ravens. Now the Ravens are pretty, one of the big stark contrasts between the Martindale defense and the McDonald defense is the much lesser utilization of Sams to drop. Now, some of that is he's willing to drop anybody. He drops both Matabike and Pierce on a number of plays from the middle of the defensive line. So he'll drop other people other than just a Sam. And we're going to talk later today about Matt Judon's career with the Ravens. And his was characterized as being a very frequent dropper, much like Bowser, and being a guy who really generated a lot of flexibility for the Blitz. The Ravens don't have that guy right now. And Van Noy is probably the closest thing on the market. He's got over 1,500 career. I think it's over 1,500. I looked at it last year, but over 1,500 career coverage snaps. So definitely a guy who has experience there. Probably a little bit long in the tooth to be doing as much covering on a rate basis today, but could still provide you with some flexibility.
Yeah. No, he was a tremendous addition last year. Really just seemed to step up and make a play when he needed a play to be made. Kind of had an uncanny ability for that. The aspect of being a true three-down, multifaceted outside backer certainly brings value. I think five outside linebackers is probably the max they want to carry on the 53. So I would say there's probably room for one veteran. And then they have some younger guys coming up that they don't want to necessarily block. Tavius Robinson, Malik Harrison brought back now, and even what's the name of the
Ajabo?
Not Ajabo. Well, of course Ajabo, but the Malik Ham is the other one I'm looking for. Yes. He might have something to say. He might have something to say at training camp about that. So I think you're probably looking for one outside backer. I'd prioritize Clowney above Van Noy, clearly. But if you have to fall back to Van Noy, that's a decent option too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the biggest fear in there for me is the Ravens have no idea what they're going to get from Ajabo. And if Ajabo was going to be able to fill on a percentage of snaps basis what Van Noy and Clowney did this last year, and basically all three of those guys, including Owe, played roughly 2/3 of the snaps. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is the Ravens hardly ever kicked anybody inside this year. They did very little of that the entire season. So when I see that playing out like that, I would agree with you. First of all, you need less outside linebackers if you're not going to kick an outside linebacker inside pretty much ever. Okay. Mm-hmm. They did a little bit of it. They did a little bit with all three of those guys in particular on, but it was very limited. If they were sure of Ajabo, then they would have no problem with that. I'm as unsure about Ajabo as I am of any player on the roster in terms of where he's going to be. I wouldn't say the sky's the limit anymore. I think there is a ceiling that is coming down, but they still got a little bit of headroom there. And the floor has dropped in terms of what it could be. But there's a wide variation of where he could end up, from basically not ever being a productive NFL player to still being a pretty darn good pass rusher, at least on a situational basis.
Yes, that's how I see him. Hopefully, I think that's probably the ceiling for the next season as a situational designated pass rusher. He was struggling tremendously to fit the run even before he was injured last year or in training camp. So fortunately, you do have Tavius, who was pretty decent against the run, and Malik Harrison was pretty good against the run. Neither of those are great pass rush specialists, so maybe you have sort of a platoon system there between those three younger guys that works out okay, but you still need somebody else with a little bit more proven track record and a known commodity on the other side of Owe.
Those guys you just mentioned, both Tavius and Malik, are good snap eaters. Tavius doesn't have a huge special teams role. Malik, of course, is on all the units, but Tavius does not have a huge special teams role, which means he's a guy who often gets left off the game or is at the risk of being left off the game day roster if all he's going to do is play, you know, 8 or 9 snaps on first down run defense paired with Harrison.
Right. And I think he could actually be the one that maybe makes sense to kick inside in your race car package. I think he did some of his best work as far as collapsing the pocket from one aligned further inside last year.
So the Ravens situation this year, though, is even better on the inside than it was last year when they were not at all tempted to run these kick inside packages. But Travis Jones really emerged in the second half of last year as a pass rusher. So I think they're going to want him there. Obviously, you're not taking Matabike off of the field on passing situations. Not anytime it's significant. And Michael Pierce is still a hell of a pass rusher. He generates pressure. They love to stunt with him. He's a great pairing with Matabike in terms of body types. To have two guys, including one who can certifiably make space with a bull rush and another who can work off that. I think they've got the horses inside, and those are the guys they really, I think, should be confident in being, you know, half of that four man front.
Yeah. Yeah. If they could bring Clowney back, I don't see why they wouldn't be up close to the league leading sacks again. I mean, they're retaining the entire defensive line. Simpson, from what we saw, is probably can 80% of the blitzing that Queen did. Mm-hmm. And you have everybody else coming back. And so, yeah, I think they have the makings of a very good pass rush. Just need that one veteran edge to round it all out.
I think it would take luck to get to 60 snaps again, because I think a lot of it was the genius of scheme that McDonald had. So we'll see, first of all, that Orr has got to bring some of that, and some of that's got to be in their DNA. And the other thing I think has got to be Ajabo has got to have a breakout to hit 60 mm-hmm. sacks again. Anyway, so I would vote pretty heavily. I would bet pretty heavily, I'd say, against 60 snaps if anyone sure. making that prop to me. Let's move on. Darrell Worley still out there. I think he's still very likely to return. The Ravens are so in need of safeties. In fact, it kind of is amazing to me they haven't made that move already. Mm-hmm. They clearly love the guy from what he did in 23, how they had 18 transactions involving him in 22. You know, you think guy who's cut that often and brought up in the practice squad and he's on, you know, elevations and releases and all these things that many times, you'd think, oh, he's just on the fringe of the roster. Uh-uh. That's very clearly the Ravens love that player.
Yeah, I really hope they do find a way to bring him back. He's a handshake guy too, so you have a little bit more roster flexibility there. You need at least two safeties. You need to add at least two safeties to the depth chart, if not three.
Yeah.
To even, you know, so to me, that's pretty much a no-brainer. He brings you a lot. He really does.
So here's my thinking on the safety position and numbers you need. If you're never going to play the dime defense, then you need your base two, plus you need Hamilton, plus you need one other player on game day if any injury happens at any position, so you're not forced to screw with where you play Hamilton. And they already had that come up, that they were Hamilton missed some time due to that the one hit that he missed half a game for, and then he also had to go back to play on the back end because of injuries on multiple occasions, whether it was Williams, might have been Steven Stone, might have missed a little bit of time, not 100% sure about that one. Darrell Worley got hurt 1 week after he played 102 snaps or so you don't want to be put in that position, which means you have to have four safeties active on game day, which probably means you need five on the roster.
Yeah.
And if you want to do any play with dime at all, you also need to make sure you have five for that. And the Ravens are the most extreme team in the league in terms of the potential to have four safeties on the field at a time, which really means, I think, they need to have five on the roster. And that means they've got to go out and find maybe a UDFA guy, maybe a veteran, cheap free agent. And they're very good at identifying the guys who fit their needs exactly there. But the guy that is draftable and you know, could be just about anywhere in the draft would be a back end split field safety, much in the mold of Stone, somebody with good instincts, somebody who can maintain that cover too, if Worley were to go down, for example.
Yes, we're in lockstep as far as the way we see the safety situation at this point.
Mm-hmm. What else? Painful process, really painful process to go through this, and player after player gets lost. I'm probably, you listeners can tell that Voss is just telling me the Zeitler news for the first time on the show, obviously. And it hurts like hell to see him go for $6 million. I'm telling you that. But the Ravens have, you know, a lot of decisions to make, and every single decision they make involving money has to be looked at with increased scrutiny on Jackson's second contract here.
Completely agree. They are up close to the lead, if not the number one lead in adjusted games lost, which is a metric that tracks sort of your credits and your debits on the roster, who you added, who you're mm-hmm. losing. And they usually are. I mean, most years they are. The beautiful thing of last year was DaCosta was able to backfill with pedigree, a former first-round overall pick, a guy with a Darby who has had a fine career. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that again, it works out great. But you can't always do that. the players have to be available and they have to be wanting to come to you for the right price. So that's the trick of it all.
Yeah. It was a remarkable year in terms of free agent signings last year for DaCosta. And you rarely get value like that. Normally, you know, a lot of people just tell you free agents don't move the needle at all in terms of what they give you for value. And the problem is they're market value players. So, you know, you have to get so much more from them for them to be really big gain players. Your gains come from your young players. It's from giving a young player a chance and getting more than what you expected because they're making almost nothing. And then you get multiple years of that and you can high five each other in the front office over that one till the cows come home, because that's where your money is really made. It is not on free agent signings. The Derrick Henry signing, it could work out for the Ravens. It's not going to, it'd be very difficult for me to see circumstances where they get so much above market value for Derrick Henry. And he's pretty cheap. You know, he's reasonably cheap. I mean, if they re-sign Jadeveon Clowney for $10 million, It'd be a good signing. I'd be happy with it. I think it fills a hole. But on the other hand, I don't think they're going to get 150% of that in terms of value from Clowney.
Yeah, well, his contributions were valued at about $15 million last year, and I think Henry's were valued at about $12 million, if I recall. But and the other piece of it is the really, really premium elite difference makers. They don't ever hit free agency. They're tagged or they're traded a year before. I mean, look at the way the Ravens had to go out and get Roquan. And that's just how it is now. Just continuing the draft and 9 draft picks now, I believe, and try to build the best 60 player roster you can. And if a few guys, if you end up with a Caillou, Blue, Kelly, Lemon, don't be afraid to cut bait soon on them either.
Yeah. All right. That's a good point from last year, and obviously very frustrating that the Ravens in recent years really haven't hit on their mid-round corners at all. So, All right. Vas, always a pleasure to do this show with you and talk football. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
My pleasure, Ken. On Twitter, X at Vasilis Beatdown, VASILIS Beatdown, co-managing editor and author for Baltimore Beatdown Blog.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to talk to you about anything this offseason. We are primarily on draft content right now. If you have a draft topic, let's talk about that before the draft when the interest is higher. Unless you want to talk draft metrics, that can be after the draft. If you want to talk anything else about franchise building, about scheme, about any two-part series that you've dreamed of doing, and I've got a lot of good ideas for this kind of thing. I really want to talk to you about that. Always looking for new folks to meet and talk football with. It's an open mic look, and we have the recollection series, of course. Just tell me the player from the Ravens past you want to talk to me about. One is out on Kelly Gregg. That was a lot of fun to do in terms of what he brought to the Ravens over the years. And I think he's a favorite of a lot of players. I'd like to hear about your favorite player too. For Vas Lerikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. And we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.